Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett. So happy to be back here with you after a little trip up to Fresno and Visalia to give a talk and come back. And I want to say a very hearty thank you to Edgar, who covered for me while I was out, and Thomas, the TikTok engine, who covered for me while I was out. I very much appreciate that. And I'm very grateful to all the folks up in Visalia who had me come up and do a breakfast talk, which was a lot of fun. They have a wonderful Catholic business community up there in Visalia, California, where all your almonds come from, and a lot of your olives come from that part of the world. Hey, it's Ask Me Anything this hour and next hour. 888-318-7884 is the number, and it's Jimmy Ake in both hours. So it is a great opportunity to call, and three lines open. A lot of times, 60 seconds into this hour, the lines are already full when people know it's Jimmy. So get on those lines if you'd like to ask him your question. 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is the podcaster behind pretty much every podcast on the internet, as far as I know. I don't know. But the two that he makes himself are Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and the Jimmy Akin Podcast, both extremely popular. Author of many books and really one of the originators of the new apologetics movement in media. Jimmy Akin, welcome.
Howdy, Cy Kellett. How you doing?
I am pretty darn good. I'm a little tired from travel, but I am pretty darn good.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good. By definition.
Yes. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Any question at all is welcome when Jimmy is here. You can ask whatever you like. 888-318-7884. What's happening to Jimmy Egg's Mysterious World?
Well, today we released an episode on the five, or actually now six, so-called UFO observables. These are characteristics that the Defense Department's program studying UFOs noticed in the last more than a decade, in about the last 15 years or so now, that are advanced flight. Most of them are advanced flight characteristics that we can't duplicate. And I was reading a book about them, or a book that discussed them, and I realized, one technology, if we could get this one technology, it would explain multiple observables. And that same thought had occurred to one of the scientists working on the project. And so he had a way that this one technology would explain all six of the observables. And so that's what we talk about in today's episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Check it out, mysterious.fm, or wherever you get your podcasts, or check out Jimmy's channel on YouTube, where you can also get the Jimmy Akin podcast. You can get all the good stuff Jimmy's producing. Check it out. Or call here and talk with Jimmy, 888-318-7884. We will start today in South Carolina, where Patrick is watching on YouTube. Patrick, thanks for starting us off today. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy. I kind of have a bit of a pickle I was hoping you could help me out with. So okay. I came back to the faith recently. I am in a non-ecclesiastical marriage. I went to confession, and my priest absolved me of all my sins, including that. We had discussed getting convalidated and confirmed later on. I've been through baptism and Eucharist. And later on, another priest said that I couldn't be absolved of my sins because of my irregular marriage. And also, the first priest said that I could engage in the marital embrace until my convalidation. How do I approach this? What do I do next?
Okay. Let me ask a few diagnostic questions just to make sure I understand the situation. So you had a non-ecclesiastical marriage, meaning a marriage not celebrated in the Catholic Church. Previous to this, had you or your spouse ever been baptized or received into the Catholic Church?
I've been baptized in the Catholic Church, and I've had First Holy Communion. However, I had not gone through confirmation when I was younger.
Yeah, confirmation is not relevant.
My wife is. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So she falls more on the Protestant side of things. So, no, she has not.
But you had been baptized in the Catholic Church prior to your marriage. What year did the marriage occur?
The marriage occurred in 2023.
Okay, so it's recent, and thus the current law is going to apply to it. I also assumed that there were no emergency circumstances, like you were about to be deployed in the military or something like that when you got married, that this was the reason you didn't have an ecclesiastical marriage is because you were away from the faith at the time. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, so the way the law that was in effect in 2023 was written, and it's the same law that's in effect now, your marriage would have been blocked from coming into existence. And so you definitely need to get it convalidated. In terms of the Marital Act, well, if you're not married to someone, you shouldn't be you shouldn't be committing the marital act with them. So the solution, to my mind, would be to live as brother and sister until such time as you're able to get a convalidation. And I wouldn't wait on that convalidation. I would get it done, assuming you still want to be married to your wife. I would get that convalidation done as soon as possible so that you can live not only a normal sacramental life, but also a normal married life.
Yes, sir. And then the final bit of clarification is, was the first confession invalid because, as you mentioned, the marriage is technically blocked since it's non-sacramental? Should I have not been absolved because of the irregularity, or is it because I had the intention of convalidation that he absolved me? I don't know.
Well, I don't know what was in his heart, but in terms of the validity of the absolution, it wouldn't be affected just because you were in an irregular marriage. You don't have to get convalidated first. As long as there's openness on your part to doing what you need to do to rectify the situation, whether that, which would presumably be living as brother and sister until such time as you can get a convalidation. And if you didn't know that's what you needed to do, then as long as you were open to living as brother and sister until such time as you can get a convalidation, then you didn't put anything in the way of the sacrament of the sacramental absolution being valid, because you were willing to do what you needed to do. And if you're willing to do what you need to do, even if you're not sure what that is, the absolution will be valid. So unless you say, oh, I wouldn't have been willing to do that, then the absolution would have been valid and you don't need to worry about that.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I that's why I asked them, because I need to know what the next step was, if I need to abstain or not. That I wanted to dot my I's and cross my T's, but I ended up being a little bit more confused. However, I appreciate your clarification, sir.
Wonderful, Pastor.
Yeah, no problem. And I want to praise you for both for coming back to the faith and for being willing to do, you know, what one is called to do in a difficult circumstance like this. That's something that honors God, and God respects and appreciates that, and it's a sign of God working in your life.
God bless you, Patrick. Thank you for the call. Thanks for getting us started on today's show. We have to take a quick break. Lots more calls to come. Two lines open, 888-318-7884.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
This is Father Dwight Longenecker. Why do you need to go to confession? Well, it's easy, to receive forgiveness for the things we've done wrong. But more importantly than that, one of the beauties of confession is that when we go to confession, we take responsibility for ourselves. Our world is besieged by those who feel entitled and want to blame others and expect others to do everything for them. When we go to confession, by God's help, we're saying, it's my job, it's my responsibility, I'm going to get on and do what I can to change myself and change the world with God's help.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's always fun on Friday when Jimmy's here and we get 2 hours of Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin. You are welcome to call and ask whatever you like. 888-318-7884. Ricky's in Bellevue, Nebraska, listening on Catholic.com. Welcome back, Ricky. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy. And hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Jimmy, I apologize. I realize my question's kind of goofy. I recently sat down with a good friend of mine and talked to him about me re-entering the church. And, you know, it was a very cordial conversation. Books were exchanged, and the book he gave me was a book written by a gentleman by the name of Paul Paveo, and it's called Rome's Audacious Claim, Should Christians be Subject to the Pope? And the reason I'm calling is just because on the backside, he calls out you and Trent Horn and Tim Staples and Patrick Madrid and almost everybody at Catholic Answers and just kind of makes the claim how you guys are taking things out of context and everything. And I have not read the book yet, so I just wanted to see if anybody at Catholic Answers, such as yourself, had any interaction with his material or anything like that.
Well, I haven't read the book either. In fact, I haven't ever heard of the book until now. I haven't had any interaction with his material.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I realize it was a long shot. I haven't read it yet, so it was something I was kind of just going on, you know, kind of just to see if you guys had. I plan on reading it, but okay. Anyway, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. I have, you know, obviously written a good bit and done videos a good bit about the papacy. And so I would imagine that's what Paveo is responding to in his book. But if I'm confident in my position, and even though I can't answer specific arguments Paveo might make without knowing what those arguments are, you know, you're welcome to check out the different write-ins and videos that I've done on the subject of the papacy and, you know, compare them to what Paveo says. And if you have further questions after you've read the book about, well, how would you answer this, you know, give us a call back and let us know.
I will look forward to it, Ricky. Thank you very much for the call. We'll go into Lincoln, Nebraska now, where Caleb is listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Welcome, Caleb. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
So it's Friday during Lent, and I just realized that I put collagen in my coffee this morning, and collagen is derived from animal skins. Am I cooked?
Are you cooked?
Yeah, it's how Zoomers say toast. Am I toast? Is it so over for me? Did I break the rules?
Well, I was going to say, in terms of being cooked, I mean, that's actually how they get collagen, isn't it? From, you know, bones and things like that. For people who may not be aware, collagen is a protein, and it is derived from, it's commonly derived from you know, animal sources. But it's not gonna affect your status in terms of the church's law. Now, even if it did, you didn't consume the collagen knowing that you weren't supposed to. So you weren't deliberately violating the church's law. This happens all the time because people make mistakes. I remember one Lenten Friday about 33 years ago where Patrick Madrid and I were together and we stopped to get lunch at a burger place and we got burgers. And in the middle of taking a bite, we realized, oh, this is a Friday in Lent. And so, you know, but there's nothing you can do at that point. We got rid of the burgers, the uneaten portions of them, and didn't worry about it beyond that because we hadn't deliberately violated the law. Now, I know a lot more about the law than I did then. And one of the things I know about the way the church's law of penance is written is that when Paul VI revised it in the 1960s, he deliberately moved it in a direction of greater flexibility precisely so that people would not have to scruple about it. And it actually, the relevant documents actually say that what they're going for is in what they're rejecting is like a repeated deliberate act of defiance. They're not so much worried about single incidents. And so even if you had violated the law knowingly and deviated from the law in a single incident, it wouldn't be something you'd need to go to confession over, because they're looking for deliberate defiance of the church's law, which reflects a systematic pattern. It's not just, oh, I had a hamburger this day, and yeah, I knew it was Lent, but I just had a hamburger. And that's not what they're talking about. They're looking for something more than that. But then there's the fact that the law is written in terms of meat, and collagen is not meat. It may be found in some animal parts, but like bones and stuff, but it is not itself meat. And so you didn't violate the church's law regarding abstinence because you didn't eat any meat.
Sounds like you're okay, Caleb. You feel better?
Wonderful. Yes, what a relief.
Good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good. All right, Caleb. I have no idea what collagen does in coffee. Have any of you, anybody? No? Well, good luck to you with the collagen there, Caleb. Ryan's in Midland, Texas, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Ryan, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
All right, Jimmy, I actually have a two-part question about the liturgy, and I'll get to the first part first. But earlier, I was watching parts of Robert F. Kennedy Sr.'s funeral on YouTube from 68, and after noticing it was in English, I was wondering, did priests at that time before the Novus Ordo have any freedom to choose how they wanted to celebrate the Mass, whether it be, you know, all in Latin or all in the vernacular?
Well, so Kennedy was assassinated in 1968, and at that time, the new order of Mass had not yet been published, because it was published in 1969. My understanding is there were provisional translations of the liturgy, you know, following the release of Sacrosanctum Concilium, the Vatican II document that called for a revision of the liturgy. There were a bunch of changes that were being made piecemeal, and there were provisional translations into vernacular languages like English that were being used. And I don't know that they had a single version that was mandated for use here in America, but I would presume that the priests who celebrated his funeral, it being such an important occasion in the life of the nation, I would assume that whatever they did in that funeral was in accord with what was allowed at the time. But I'd have to go back and check the relevant liturgical documents to see exactly how much flexibility there was in this period between the release of Sacrosanctum Concilium and the release of the new order of Mass in 1969.
Okay.
All right, that's good. I like that. Now, the second part I had was, before Vatican II permitted the concelebration of Mass, did they ever concelebrate Mass at all? Would that have been not allowed, or would it have been unheard of for that to happen, depending on what the occasion was?
It depends on which part of the church you're talking about. Concelebration is something that has been present for a long time in Eastern Rite Catholic liturgies. It was not present in the Latin Rite for centuries, and so you didn't have concelebration in the Latin Rite prior to the liturgical reform after Vatican II. This was something that was in the Eastern Rites, and the Latin Rite decided to adopt it as a possibility. But if you mean in the Latin Rite, did they have some occasions prior to Vatican II when concelebration was done? No, they did not. Every priest celebrated his own Mass. But in other parts of the church, in Eastern Rites, they did have concelebration, and the Latin Rite decided to adopt that.
Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Hey, there's three lines open again today. I'm not sure what's going on today. I hope people haven't, they're not taking it easy on calling because it's a Friday in Lent. Maybe this is a Lenten penance people are doing. The line's not full for Jimmy. Seems like it might be a Lenten penance for somebody. 888-3187-884. Fred's in Indiana, watching on YouTube. Hi, Fred.
Hello.
Got a question for Jimmy?
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Hello, Jimmy. What my question is that God seems unfair if hell's eternal. There's another view about hell that it's not eternal, that God wipes you out of existence. Some people call it nihilism. And I wanted to know what you thought about that.
Well, there have been people in Christian history who have been annihilationists and held that, you know, the lost do not continue to exist. Well, if you go back to the age of the church fathers, yeah, there were a few individuals who held that. But this has not been the dominant view in Christian history, and it's not the current teaching of the church. If you look in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it acknowledges that that hell is a real possibility for people to go to, and that it is eternal. Consequently, people who have difficulty with the idea of there being people experiencing an eternal hell have typically gone a different route. Instead of proposing annihilationism, they have commonly adopted a view that's sometimes called hopeful universalism, which is the idea that even though hell is a real possibility in the sense that someone could, by their own determination, decide to reject God in a way that would result in them being eternally separated from Him, that in fact God works His grace in people's lives in such a way that nobody ends up having that happen to them. This was the position, for example, of Cardinal Hans Urs von Balthasar, that God somehow arranges for everybody to leave this life in a state of grace. Exactly how that would work is something one can speculate about. It could even be, you know, God given some kind of revelation to a person in their dying moments that we can't see or perceive, but that would efficaciously bring that person to repentance. We can't assert that that's what happens because God hasn't told us that's what happens, but we could, in von Balthasar's view, hope for that. And so that's why it's called hopeful universalism. Most Christians, though, have not been hopeful universalists. Most Christians have held that there really are individuals who have been lost, and the reason that they are not reconciled with God is because of the way the human will works. So it's not just that they did bad things in their life and you know, are thereby eternally punished thereafter. Instead, it's because when a human dies, our will becomes fixed on either good or evil. And so if a person dies rejecting God, they continue to reject God. And so that's the reason that hell is eternal. It's not that God wouldn't forgive them if they would repent. It's that they just won't repent. They're like angels in that regard. The will becomes fixed. And so if a person dies rejecting God, then they continue to reject God after death, and thus they continue to be in a state of separation from God.
Okay, Fred?
What about the... Yeah, that's a good answer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you... You sounded like you were about to say something else, but we're all done, Fred?
Yeah, I was wondering about... He was saying that, you know, a person that wills to do evil that's against God, but I was thinking of a person that doesn't intend to do evil, but he's committed a mortal sin, but he hasn't got to the priest.
Oh, well, okay.
Another question.
Well, I can address it briefly before we get to the break. But if someone just has committed a mortal sin and just hadn't gotten to go to confession yet, that doesn't mean they're definitely lost. They may have repented in their heart with what's known as perfect contrition, which is a rejection of sin based on love of God. And if they have if they've done that, then they're reconciled with God even before they get to confession. They still need to go to confession, but if they were to die, let's say, on their way to confession, if they had perfect contrition, they would still go to heaven because they'd already been reconciled by that rejection of sin.
And Fred, thank you very much. That takes us right to the break. Jimmy Akin is our guest. It's Ask Me Anything. What do you know? Every line full now. I assume Fred's going to let the line go, so at least one line open during the break. Give it a try if you'd like to talk with Jimmy. It's Ask Me Anything, as I said, 888-318-7884. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Deepen your connection to the Church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the Church Fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the Church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Matt Swaim here. Monday on the Sunrise Morning Show, it'll be our St. Patrick's Day special as we dig into the life and legacy of the great patron saint of Ireland. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A little bit of groovy music, a lot of Jimmy Akin. We got 2 hours with Jimmy Akin today. Also, lots of folks on the line. It's 888-318-7884. It's Ask Me Anything. If you've got a question about the Catholic faith, about you want to know about the moral life, got a philosophical question, or the other category, anything else, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Maybe you want to talk about one of the mysteries, one of the more than 300 mysteries now Jimmy's got covered in Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, whatever. Just call 888-318-7884. Paul is in Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on X. You can listen on X now? Is that? Oh,
yes.
That's cool. All right, Paul, we're glad to have you. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. All right. I'll make this very brief and as brief as I can. And I'll try not to be emotional. So I found out today that my daughter, who's 20, who I've been supporting but estranged from for the last 7 years, my ex-wife told me today that she was diagnosed with borderline personality that her mother has had. And in terms of culpability, part of it, it's multi-causal, both hereditary and
environmental.
Yeah. And I, as a Catholic, I didn't let go of the marriage in the early days. And by holding on to it for all those years, I caused, I contributed to a very, volatile environment for her. So I'm just wondering about my culpability, and I'm wondering if I could pray to Saint Dimfa or anyone else to take that off of her and even put it on me.
All right, Paul, let's get you an answer.
I can do to help her.
Okay.
Okay. So I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Your former wife herself has borderline personality disorder. Is that correct?
Yes. So she had and has slowly overcome it in the past.
Good. Okay.
Years.
Okay. So, I wasn't there when you were married, but people are not supposed to just walk away from a marriage when there are problems. There are problems in every marriage. And if everyone walked away from their marriage when they first hit problems, then there would be no marriages that would survive. And marriage would not be what it's supposed to be, which is a lifelong union. So, I can't accuse you of doing anything wrong in trying to preserve your marriage. Now, sometimes that'll happen when you try to preserve a marriage, it can exacerbate the problems, but that's not necessarily your fault. In fact, if your wife had borderline personality disorder, at the time, I would suggest that was a contributing factor. And it you may well not have even known that she had borderline personality disorder at that time. In terms of so I can't fault you at all for anything that that's been done in this situation. It sounds to me like you've been trying to be helpful to your daughter. You mentioned supporting her and things like that. And in terms of, how to help her going forward, well, she may need therapy. I'm not an expert in borderline personality disorder. I know some about it, but not a huge amount. But I would say at least it's been identified now, and you say your wife got better, from it. And so I would hold out hope of your daughter getting better from it too. In terms of, can you ask God to, take it off of your daughter and have you do something to make up for it? Like, you don't want to take on borderline personality disorder yourself. That's not going to be helpful. And God tends not to grant that kind of request anyway. Lots of people have, in fact, basically everybody has loved ones at times that are dealing with problems. And it's a natural human impulse to wish you could take your loved one's problems on yourself. Like, if, let's say, a person has a spouse who gets cancer, well, the spouse who doesn't have cancer may say, God, I would take my spouse's cancer if you'll just let them be okay. But God tends not to answer that kind of request positively. He tends not to just take one person's cancer and transfer it to another person. Similarly, I wouldn't expect him to take one person's borderline personality disorder and give it to one of their loved ones. Now, you can ask God anything you want, but being realistic about what the likely outcomes are, I wouldn't expect God to give you either borderline personality disorder or any other specific kind of suffering in order to remove this from your daughter. What I can say is that God never allows
an evil, whether that's sin or in this case suffering. He never allows an evil to exist unless he's going to bring about some greater good. So you can have confidence that despite the difficulty of the situation right now for everyone involved, you, your daughter, your former wife, God will bring about a greater good. What that's going to be, I can't say. We're not given that information in this life, but you can be confident he's going to bring about a greater good. And the thing I would recommend to you to do is try to deal with the situation in a way that would please God. And that can mean getting educated, perhaps further on borderline personality disorder and what can be done, helping your daughter if she's willing to work additional steps, you know, getting therapy and so forth, you know, maybe financial help if she doesn't want any other kind of involvement. But basically working with the situation and doing the best you can, and praying to God that if you please him in what you're doing to help with the situation, and even if you're not pleasing him, but you know, you're trying, give your daughter help, you know, and leave it up to God exactly how the help manifests and what direction it comes from and what degree it takes hold in. This is a common situation, not borderline personality disorder specifically, but having a loved one who's dealing with a significant issue like this is very, very common. It happens in basically everybody's life at one point or another. And the thing to do is do the best you can, take it day by day, take it one step at a time, and ask that God would help everybody involved and trust him with the long-term results, which we know will end up producing good. So you have that as a hope for the future.
Paul, thank you very much for the call. I certainly hope Jimmy's answer was helpful to you. Please call back if we can be helpful again. Jimmy mentioned educating yourself, and I will just recommend to you the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They have wonderful classes for parents to help them know how to deal with children facing these kind of issues. So again, thank you very much.
Also, Paul asked about praying to St. Dimphna, and she is a traditional patron of mental health problems, so you can definitely pray to St. Dimphna.
Thanks, Paul. Up to my hometown, or the town that I live in, Jonathan. I don't know if I know Jonathan. Oceanside, California, listening on Catholic.com. Do we know each other, Jonathan?
No, this is my first time calling.
Well, I'm happy to talk with you. Nice to talk to someone from the town. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hello. My question is, if God created humans on other planets or maybe other realities, would the sin of Adam and Eve affect them too? Or is the original sin localized to just us humans on Earth?
Well, we don't know for sure because God hadn't told us. It's possible that that when mankind fell, that it had impacts outside of the human race. And so it's possible that when humanity fell, it could have caused other races to fall. But we don't know that other races even exist, much less has God told us that our fall caused them to fall. It's also possible that we fell here and the effects of that were confined to us. There could be races out there that are unfallen. You know, C.S. Lewis explores that possibility in his space trilogy, for example, where the planet Venus has an unfallen race on it. In fact, Earth is uniquely fallen in C.S. Lewis's space trilogy. By the way, the science in the space trilogy is terrible, but the theology is better. I would say that now there is a difference of opinion among Catholic theologians historically about did the fall of man affect other things here on Earth? And there have been theologians who have said, yeah, that the fall of man caused some animals to become carnivores. I tend to disagree with that, though. I tend to go with St. Thomas Aquinas and say, no, lions still were predators. They were obligate carnivores before the fall of man. The nature of animals did not change. What entered the world was human death, not death itself. And so I would tend to argue that I would tend to argue that position. And I would tend to say that the fall of man just affects man. So if that's the case here on Earth, I wouldn't expect the effects of the fall of man to affect any other races. But since God hadn't told us if there are other races or whether they were affected, I can't say that for 100%.
All right, Jonathan.
Yeah, that was great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well,
no problem, man. If you would like some further thoughts about the implications of religion for intelligent life, check out episode 55 of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. It's at mysterious.fm, like FM radio, mysterious.fm/55.
Thank you, Jonathan. That will bring us to the break. Right back with more Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
At EWTN Radio, your family. And because you're a part of our family, we value your opinions on what you hear on EWTN. You can call our listener comment line 24/7 at 205-795-5773. We value your comments, your questions, and any suggestions you may have to make EWTN Radio even better. 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Jonathan, previous caller, his question began with the words, if God created human beings on other planets. I believe more questions with that beginning for Jimmy Akin than all the other apologists combined. You are the recognized expert on if God created humans somewhere other than Earth. 888-318-7884 is the number. Let's go to West Palm Beach, Florida, where Anne is listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Anne, I hope you're surviving the winter down there in Palm Beach.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
All right, good. Good for you. It's a tough task, but I'm glad you're up to it. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
My question is, I read that when you procure an abortion, you are automatically excommunicated. My question is, if you confess that sin in confession, are you no longer excommunicated?
Okay. Well, first thing to say is the excommunication won't take effect unless a whole bunch of other conditions are fulfilled. Like, for example, you have to know that the penalty exists and then deliberately defy it. So many American women have, and of course this only applies to Catholics, but even many American Catholic women have no idea that this excommunication exists. And so if, God forbid, they were to get an abortion, it wouldn't cause them to become excommunicated because they didn't knowingly defy the law. And you have to knowingly defy the law to trigger an excommunication. Having said that, let's suppose in a particular case that a woman did know about the excommunication and said, I don't care, I'm getting an abortion anyway. And so she ends up getting an excommunication. But then, thank God, she repents and goes to confession. Well, the penalty for abortion, my memory is that it is a reserved censure, which means that ordinarily it would require the intervention of a bishop to lift it. So at least the way the law is written, it would not be something that a priest could ordinarily absolve one from. However, there are two things that two notes, further notes that need to be made in that regard. The first one is that if it is difficult for a person to remain unabsolved, then an ordinary priest can remove this censure, provided that the removal of this type of censure is normally granted. And the answer is that means that an ordinary priest, if it's difficult for a woman to remain unabsolved, then a priest could go ahead and absolve her, because this is the type of thing that is regularly granted. The absolution is regularly granted by the bishops. So she wouldn't have to remain unabsolved if it would be difficult for her to remain unabsolved for the time that would be needed to consult the bishop. But there's a second and even more potent note that needs to be made about the situation here in America, because abortion for the last number of decades has been so common in America that my understanding is that basically every diocesan bishop has delegated this authority to their priests. And so my understanding is basically everywhere in America, priests have been granted the authority needed to absolve from abortion.
That makes sense?
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, Ann, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Roman in Nebraska. Well, busy day from Nebraska today. Roman, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with the question.
Well, I hope I get it straight, because I have my notes at home, because in February I went to the kids' non-denominational service, and he got up there, "You don't need priests and going to confessions." I confronted him afterwards, and he said it was in Hebrews, and he couldn't find it then, and that was out in Phoenix, and I haven't got back to him. The only place I found it, and I thought was in my notes, was in Hebrews 4:24, but where he was getting this from. Can you tell me where he would get that from and how he would interpret it that way, that we no longer need priests?
Well, so you said you thought that this came from what? Hebrews 4, what did you say?
4:24, that 4:20 something, I thought. But I'm not at home. I just got into town to go to Stations of the Cross, and I thought, oh, man, I don't remember my notes.
Yeah, so I'm afraid that I'm at a loss to explain where he would appeal to in this regard in the book of Hebrews. I doubt it's Hebrews 4:24, because there is no Hebrews 4:24. Hebrews 4 ends at verse 16. And that verse just says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need," which doesn't in any way rule out the priesthood. There are passages in Hebrews that talk about the uniqueness of Christ's sacrifice and how Christ's sacrifice was made once for all in comparison to the sacrifices of the Jewish priests, who repeatedly had to slaughter animals. But this doesn't in any way rule out the Catholic understanding of the priesthood, because Catholics don't slaughter animals all over again, and Christ is not being slaughtered all over again. What happens is in the Mass, Christ's sacrifice is re-presented to God, but he's not dying again. And that's the point of distinction that Hebrews is making, that Christ dies only once, compared to Judaism, where you have abundant, repeated animal death. And that's true in Catholicism, too. Christ dies only once, and there is no abundant, repeated animal death in Catholicism. So so none of the verses in Hebrews say what people who want to deny the ministerial priesthood take them to be saying. There are other passages that point in the other direction. For example, in Hebrews 9:23, it says that in regard to the sacrifice of Christ, that the heavenlies, the heavenly temple where Christ is now, needed to be purified with better sacrifices, plural, more than one, than the earthly animal sacrifices that purified the earthly temple. And that would suggest that there's an ongoing sacrificial aspect to Jesus's ministry in heaven, where he continually presents his sacrifice on the cross to the Father, and the Mass with a priest here on earth is an outworking of Christ's heavenly intercessory ministry, where he's constantly representing his sacrifice on the cross to the Father. And the Mass here on earth is just an outworking of that, that participates in that. So I hope that's helpful. I'm afraid that, you know, if I, without knowing exactly what, I'm not a mind reader, at least not a good one. So I can't tell you what exactly this pastor or whomever may have been thinking of. But if you find out, let me know, and I'll be happy to talk about that.
Thanks, Roman. Thanks very much. Going to Arizona now, Cody, watching on YouTube. Cody, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey. Hi, Jimmy. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
A new convert, and you're one of the influences that helped me come to the faith through reason. And my question is, how do I stick with being very faithful while having ADD and having a hard time concentrating for an extended period of time, especially during the difficult time going through my chronic health problems?
Okay. You said ADD. Were you thinking of ADHD there?
Yes.
Okay. Well, basically, whenever anyone has a problem in their life, you do the best you can with it. Some people have physical difficulties that, you know, make it hard for them at Mass. Someone might have back problems that, for example, that make it hard for them to concentrate at Mass. But they go to Mass and they do the best they can. They do what they can to alleviate their back problems. And they do their best to, you know, use what focus they can muster to pay attention to the Mass. And there's a phrase you may or may not have encountered at this point, but there will be, you'll sometimes hear Catholics talk about offering up their own sufferings. And basically what that means is when you have something that is causing a problem for you, you say, God, I'm going to try to deal with this the best I can. And if I, and so I'm going to, and if I handle it well, then please give me or someone else a blessing. And that's called offering up your problems or offering up your sufferings. You're going to let God worry about them, and you're just going to deal with them the best you can. And so if you have ADHD or something like that that's causing you to lose focus in Mass, that's okay. Also, frankly, it's something you can offer up. Also, frankly, I wouldn't stress about it too much. Everybody's mind wanders at Mass. Thomas Howard even has a book that I wrote an endorsement for called If Your Mind Wanders at Mass, because everybody has minds that wander. That's actually part of the human evolutionary design. We're not meant to have rigid laser focus on one thing, because if we did, if we were, you know, if we were back in caveman times and we were rigidly laser focused on one thing, then a predator could sneak up on us and we could end up dying as a result of that. So we're designed to have minds that bounce around to different subjects so that we can pay attention to multiple things in our environment and so forth. And if you've got ADHD, well, you've just got a little more of that bounciness than most people do. So cut yourself slack. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, do what you can and don't worry about it beyond that.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's very helpful. I really appreciate it.
All right, Cody, I'll tell you what. I'd like to send you a copy of Jimmy's book, The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It. If you'd like that book, just hang on the line, give us an address. We'll send it over to Arizona for you, and maybe we'll get to talk with you again. Jimmy Akin is our guest. You know him from Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and the Jimmy Akin podcast and The Bible is a Catholic Book and A Daily Defense, 365 Days, plus one to becoming a better apologist. and the 931 podcasts he appears on as a guest. And now you get to talk with him. You can call up and ask your question. 888-318-7884. We'll continue with Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin on this Friday in Lent right after this on Catholic Answers Live.